As entrepreneurs, we see the world differently. In a world that not only tolerates but promotes mediocrity, we unreasonably demand more. Giving you access to the world's most successful entrepreneurs and thought leaders, this podcast uncovers the untold truths of what it really takes to build a multi-million dollar business while optimizing your personal performance in every area of your life. I'm Jack DeLosa. Let's get to work. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Jack DeLosa podcast, the place you go to master your business and elevate your life. Today, I am super excited to be joined by a rockstar entrepreneur, Marie Forleo, founder of B School, all the way from LA. Now, Marie is an entrepreneur, writer, philanthropist, and unshakable optimist dedicated to helping you become the person you want to be. I've personally been following Marie for at least 10 years and have consistently, as have my team, got so much value out of following this woman. She's created a socially conscious digital empire that touches millions through her award-winning show, Marie TV, her world-class online training programs, which we'll speak a little bit about in this discussion, and her best-selling books. Her show has reached over 44 million views and counting. And she's interviewed some of the big names like Oprah, Tony Robbins, Richard Branson, just to name a few. Marie Forleo, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, Jack, thank you for having me on. It's an honor to be here.
Awesome. Now, Marie, you may or may not even remember this, but I remember watching an interview with you on Mixergy about 7 or 8 years ago that was focused primarily on customer and client retention, which I think was perhaps the best content piece I had ever seen on customer and client retention. So that's where I really want to focus this conversation today, on acquiring the right customers, but equally, if not more importantly, retaining and satisfying your existing ones. You spoke about, in that Mixergy interview, if I just sort of go back to that quickly, where you started that whole conversation was you were talking about the key to client retention is picking the right ones to start with, right? Getting the right customers in the door. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, one of the things I like to share with people is this idea, and it's counterintuitive, about sales prevention and how important it is to prevent sales. I think one of the mistakes that all of us can make, especially when we're first starting out or, you know, we're trying to get something off the ground and we believe so deeply in it, you know, a product, a service, an idea, something that we know in our heart of hearts can help everyone. And so, of course, then we try and reach everyone. And we say, well, this could, of course, help the moms and the dads and the young people and the older people and the more experienced people. And there's a great phrase that I like to teach folks, especially when it comes to copywriting, but it absolutely relates to what we're talking about now, is if you're talking to everybody, you're talking to nobody. You start to water down your message. You get less specific. You get really vague. And all of a sudden, you start rounding off your edges where what was so incredible and unique and one of a kind about you gets lost in the mix. And so this idea of sales prevention comes back to understanding who your ideal clients are and speaking so precisely to them in terms of their psychographics. It may be demographics, it may not be, but it's exactly who you're best meant to serve, and then having the courage to tell everyone else this isn't for you. So actively preventing people from actually signing up for your program or buying your products or your services. And I'll give you a quick example of this so people have some context. So when we first started our B School program, which is online business school for modern entrepreneurs, you know, this is going to be our 10th year doing it. So a decade ago, when I first started talking about this program and rolling it out, I was making some of those same mistakes. I was like, well, of course, it could help people that have this kind of business or that kind of business. And I realized after our first year that I had done too good of a job of selling it. And I had gotten people into the program that honestly weren't the right fit for us. They weren't the right fit in terms of the content that we were teaching, in terms of my particular teaching style, my values versus their values. It wasn't like they were wrong. It just was like we weren't the right fit. So the next year when I went out to promote the program again, because we only promote it once a year, I tried to do a much better job at saying, hey, this is who we're for and this is who we're not for. And here's how it showed up in a real example. I was on a promotional call with one of our partners, and we were taking live questions and from the audience. And some woman showed up on the call and she started to explain her situation and what she was going through. And she said, is B-School right for me? And I said, no, you should not buy this program. It is not for you. I can tell you some other books. I can put you in some other directions. I think you're amazing. But based on what you shared with me, I can't provide value to you. And I want to direct you to someplace else that can. And it was such a wonderful moment because she's like, oh my goodness, I don't think I've ever had anyone tell me in this kind of context, no, but I really appreciate it. And again, there was nothing harsh about it. But we've started to do that more and more. I try to lean into that as much as I can in everything that we do in our business. But I think one of the biggest steps that all of us can take to increasing our sales is having the courage to prevent some. And so that comes back to what you were talking about in terms of knowing who your ideal client is in the first place and being really, really clear and specific in how you speak to them.
Marie, in a lot of your trainings, you go quite deep into avatar development and getting really clear. Just quickly for the listeners here, where does one start? Are there key questions or paradigms that one should be thinking through in terms of defining their avatar?
Yeah. So there's many different ways you can crack into this, but one of the easiest ways that I've found for our students and even for myself is I try and think about what are the pain points that this product or this solution is solving. And who do I know in my real life who struggles with this? So there's been times when I think about, you know, let's say a woman in one of our programs or a really good friend of mine. I'll tell you this, Jack, to develop the B-School program, it's actually based on one single woman. That's how the whole program started. It was a woman that I had in a high-level mentorship program prior to B-School. She was an attorney from Canada who was excellent at what she did, but she was really excited about turning her expertise into an online educational program that could scale. And I literally went through a series of questions. I was actually drinking beers with a friend. And I said, you know what? I need to call up this woman, Laura, who we had a friendship. So she was not only a client, but she was a dear friend. And I said, can I ask you a bunch of questions, Laura? And she's like, absolutely, fire away. And so I was asking her like, okay, so what keeps you up at night? And she would tell me like, these are the things I'm thinking about. These are the pain points. This is what I can't seem to figure out in my own head. And I said, okay, you know, what do you really want from this kind of learning experience? And so I just started going down all of these different, somewhat basic questions, but I would really listen, Jack, to not only what she said on the surface, but I did my best to read in between the lines, to dig deeper, to ask her, okay, well, why does that scare you? Or what's frustrating about that? Or when have you had this disappointing experience before? And tell me more about that. So it's about empathy. It's about being willing to think about some specific person you know who you feel in your heart and soul that you could provide value to and just interviewing them so that you can understand how to make them feel safe, how to communicate the value that you can provide, and how to ensure that you can get them to the outcome that they most want.
I'm so glad this is where this conversation is going. One of the reasons I love you is I think you take empathy and what most people would consider to be a gray area or soft skills or magic or intuition, and you're really good at codifying it and articulating it. If we just continue the line of thought around empathy, the other thing you talk about when it comes to customer and client retention is kind of like empathy mapping, you know, at each stage of the customer journey, talk to their feelings or their emotions at that stage of the game. Can you talk to us about that principle and why it's so effective?
Oh, Jack, I adore you for bringing this up. Thank you so much. I actually forgot about this aspect. So this is really, really fun to do. And it is incredible when it comes to decreasing refund rates, increasing customer retention. So one of the things that I started to do was map really the customer journey. So there's the part of the customer journey before they say yes to your product or service. So that's kind of the pre-sale period, right? And that's kind of what we were talking about with me interviewing my friend Laura and asking her about all the things going through her head and her heart that were preventing her from getting the results she desired. And I felt that a program I could develop, you know, could help her get to that point. But that's all pre-sale. That's before she's handing over her money. So it's great to come from an empathetic perspective and map your customer's journey before the sale. So that's kind of step one. But then there's this other magical stage when your customer has said yes to you, where they've already gave you money and now they're in the experience. They're consuming your product or your service, or they're working with it, you know, whatever it is, if it's a physical product, if it's a live experience, doesn't matter. But we also want to map the empathetic journey of what is that customer experiencing when they first open the box, let's say, or they take the first step, or they consume the first video, or again, whatever it is that your actual customer experiences. Can you map that process down on paper and get into your customer's head and really predict? And you can also ask these questions. Well, what's the first kind of pain point? Are they confused? Do they feel overwhelmed? Are they having a little bit of buyer's remorse? And so you actually put yourself in their shoes and you start to answer those emotional questions or those fears or concerns that they might have while they're consuming or experiencing your product or your service. And through emails, through videos, through follow-up, through let's say even snail mail, right? You could write a letter. There are so many creative ways that you can reassure your customer that you've got their back, that you understand how difficult it might be, that you understand the doubts they may be experiencing in the process they're going through, or a stuck point they might hit, or, hey, a lot of our customers have gotten frustrated here. That's very predictable. And if you're feeling that right now, you're not wrong. You're not broken. You didn't make a bad decision, but here's how we can help you move through it. And so it just takes customer experience to a whole other level. And it allows people to feel trust, to feel loved, to feel cared for, and Jack, that you have their back to get them to the ultimate outcome that they paid you to help them get to.
I absolutely love it. Marie, I suppose one of my observations is that perhaps the majority of business owners focus more on the mechanics of a customer journey as opposed to the empathy or the consumer's emotions per se. How important do you think it is, and why is it so critical to get right?
Yes. Well, I think the psychological and emotional journey of our customers is actually one of the most important to take care of. So let's just set the stage here. We're assuming, right? You and I know you believe so much in what you do. You do such great work for your clients and your audience. So you and I are making this assumption that anyone listening right now, that you have a great product or service, right? That it actually works, that all of the technical things are sound. So we're kind of working off of that foundation. A lot of people just stop there though. And it's a very cold and mechanical way, I believe, to approach business. And it leaves out some of not only the most satisfying and creative pieces, but honestly, the pieces that create raving fan customers for life, the pieces that will get folks to shout from the rooftops about how amazing your brand is, to become your on the ground kind of grassroots marketing team for you for free. So I get very excited about this topic. And I think people don't pay attention to it, frankly, because we don't have enough conversations about it, which is why I'm so excited you and I are having this right now. But B, I think you hit upon something earlier in our conversation where you said these are considered soft skills, right? These are kind of considered, oh, this isn't as important as the data or the X, Y, and Z, and how many times they click on blah, 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 blah. And what we start to do though, when we only focus on those kind of hard data points or the technicals of anything, is we get disconnected from our heart and emotions. And Jack, this is what I know better than anything else in the world. Facts tell, stories sell, and all of us buy based on emotions. We have these wonderful, grandiose notions that we buy based on logic, and we're so reasonable, and we think things through, and it's bullshit. It's total bullshit. We buy and we stay with people for emotional reasons. So when you and I as entrepreneurs can tap into our hearts, can remember that there's a human being on the other side of that transaction who has a mom and dad, who probably has kids, who has struggles, who stays up at night, who gets anxious and fearful, and they just really want someone to care about them and listen, man, this is when we get to really transform people through our businesses. And there is no greater responsibility and opportunity in the world to have meaning in our businesses.
I cannot tell you how refreshing it is to hear that. Listeners, if you're listening right now, rewind the last 10 minutes and listen to that again. I seriously think we just covered the crux of what is so incredibly important in business and so often missed. Now, Marie, you've also got a Copy Cure course that, by the way, my entire team have done and found it incredibly insightful, just to sort of continue on the line of empathy and speaking to emotions. What are some of the tactical lessons you can share to help people really connect with the hearts and minds of their consumer to speak their language?
Yes. So one of the things that we try and do so often is hop on the phone and have conversations with our customers. You know, depending on the size of your team, for anyone listening right now, if you're starting off and you're a one-person show, which is how many of us start off, I was that way for, you know, probably 7 years of my career. I'm a turtle. I'm very, very slow. And for other people who may have large teams, you know, now I think we have a team of almost 20 customer happiness support specialists. So I'm constantly kind of talking with them via Slack. The point here is, though, to talk with your customers. And they may not even be people that have given you money yet. They may be people that are considering. They're kind of hovering around your brand. They're interacting through social or on the blog or in any other way. And just spend 5, 10, 15 minutes having a conversation saying, hey, Lucy, you know, I noticed that you were leaving comments on the blog and it's clear that you're maybe struggling with X, Y, or Z. I'm not going to try and sell you anything. I just want to hear more. What's happening in your life right now? You know, why did you kind of come to our blog? What are you looking to accomplish? Tell me about it. And Jack, I will tell you, if folks just had conversations and took notes on those conversations, they would be astounded, because what you start to hear are common threads. You start to hear these common phrases about what people say, especially when they're talking about the things that they most want to overcome, the frustrations that are kind of keeping them up at night. In the Copy Cure program, we call it, it's a little bit of a saucy way to describe it, but it's night sweats and wet dreams, meaning night sweats, right? The things that just absolutely, they make us freak out. And all of us as human beings have those kind of concerns in our life. And many times it's a problem that we're willing to pay money to solve. It could be around construction. It can be around our child. It can be around our health. It can be around our business. And then if you look at the wet dreams category, again, I know it's sassy, so forgive me. That's just how I think. I'm from New Jersey. This is how I roll. The wet dream is really like, well, what is our fantasy solution? What's that aspirational outcome that we really want to create for ourselves? And when we can start to get the clear and specific words that our customers are using in order to describe both of those scenarios, all of a sudden we have tactical copy that we can deploy on our social media pages, on our sales pages. You can give it to your customer service team for them to say these things in their email interactions to kind of touch base and say, hey, are you struggling with this? And this is how we can help. So I just want to say one other thing, Jack, on this topic. The best copywriting starts in your customer's head, not yours.
I love that.
Right? So if we can just be quiet, and I know I'm talking a lot right now, but no, you know, this is an interview. But in the context of really getting to understand who our customers are. You know, one of the things that we talk about in the Copy Cure program, which by the way, I do have to ask, I wonder if your team went through version 1.0 or version 2.0. You have access to both, but the 2.0 version, which we just released this summer, is banging. So if your team hasn't gone through it twice, have them go through it again. They have access to, it's like doubled in size. And there is a whole slew of other worksheets and training videos that will blow y'all's mind. Done. Anyway, back to what we're talking about here, getting down to those clear and specific bits of copy, it is like rocket fuel for your business. When you can, there's an exercise we talk about called the birthday candles test. And a lot of times us as entrepreneurs, we make up these very vague, ambiguous kind of statements like, oh, I really want to, you know, take my life to the next level. And I'm certainly guilty of using copy like this too, where it gets so generally like, what the hell does that mean? Versus, right? I want to increase my revenue by between 30% and 50% over these next 12 months. Or, you know, sometimes in the, and I'll just say this again, this is a very kind of gendered thing I'm about to say, so forgive me. But I work with many women, and sometimes we women, including myself, can have challenges around getting clear and specific around what the benefit is of what we're offering. So I've heard women just say, you know, well, I'm going to help you step into your power. And it's like, what the fuck does that mean? are you going to give me the ability to step on any stage and deliver a keynote with total confidence? Or, you know what I mean? Step into my power. Does that mean I'm going to wear a superwoman cape? What does it mean? So the birthday candles test is this. Would your client wish for this if they were blowing out the birthday candles on their birthday cake? Like, nobody blows out the birthday candles and says, I hope this year I can just step into my power, because it doesn't mean shit. But that woman might say, you know what? I really want to write a New York Times bestselling book. For her, that's the tangible, concrete expression of stepping into her power. Does that make sense?
It makes absolute, complete sense. Again, I absolutely love that. Absolutely love that. So I'm just taking a moment to digest all of that. That is absolutely amazing, Maria. I'm really glad we're having this conversation. Another video I watched of yours recently was around strategies you use to overcome procrastination. It's something that obviously holds so many business owners back. How do you overcome it?
Well, there's a few things. I really love my calendar. Like, my calendar is my best friend. Mm. And I have learned in life, and I've gotten a lot of pushback on this from folks when I start to teach them about productivity, and we walk through this in B-School, and I try and do it as much as I can, because I think in today's culture, so many of us are feeling overstretched, overcommitted, overworked, like we're drowning. We don't have enough time to do anything. That's a whole other conversation. We can kind of go down that path. But I think a lot of it has to do with how much we've allowed technology to infiltrate our lives, and how we are now allowing our devices to kind of train us rather than us training it or using it to our benefit. But when it comes to procrastination, for me, my calendar really is my best friend. So if I have little time blocks set up on my calendar, and again, I know this sounds really basic, I obey my own wishes. Right? So if I set this calendar appointment, let's say, to work on my book from 5:30 a.m. to 7 a.m., unless something really happens where I'm ill or there's some fire in my family, you know, something that needs to be handled immediately, I am going to honor my commitment to me because I respect myself. You know, there's a saying that we talk about in Marie TV, if you want to be responsible, keep your promises to others. But if you want to be successful, keep your promises to yourself. Mm. And so for me, overcoming procrastination just has to do with planning and commitment and showing up for myself when I say I'm going to.
Mm, I absolutely love that. Maria, I mentioned in the introduction that you'd interviewed some huge names, Oprah, Richard Branson, Tony Robbins, just to name a few. Looking back at the interviews that you've conducted with a lot of the world's most successful people, is there a key pattern that stands out to you in terms of how these types of people have achieved a superhuman level of success?
Yes. So one little quick adjustment there. So Oprah actually interviewed me. I have not had the pleasure quite yet, but I hope to. We're just planting a seed for the future. So it's just not yet. But in terms of common threads, you know, actually just a few weeks ago, I interviewed my favorite author of my favorite book, Stephen Pressfield. It's called The War of Art. For anyone actually, you know, tagging off of that idea about procrastination or resistance or self-sabotage, I would highly recommend that book to anyone listening into your audience. And if they haven't read it in a while, just pick it back up and read it again, because it's always fresh and new for me too. Yeah. I think one of the biggest common threads that I've noticed is this willingness to be their unconventional selves.
Mm.
So to take a stand for their work, their vision, the way that they want to do things in the world. You know, I was at a Tony Robbins event not too long ago, and I adore Tony. I think he's wonderful. I've known him for years now, and I've received so much benefit from not only his work, but interacting with him personally. He's just been a real, real sweetheart to me, really, really dear. And one of the things I appreciate about Tony is, like, he just does his own thing. Like, the way he does his events, the way he shows up at his events, the way he speaks into what he is passionate about, he's willing to take a stand for things even when folks don't agree with him. Mm. And I really appreciate that. And you don't have to agree with anyone all the time, right? We can all have disagreements about certain issues, and that's fine. But I see the same thing with Oprah and her willingness to just go out and do the things that she wants to do, even though everyone said, oh, that's a silly idea, or why are you, you know, supporting Weight Watchers, or why are you starting your own network, or why are you going to put this spiritual content on TV? And time again, she had the faith and the courage to trust her vision, despite all of these other people saying this was not the way to go, or, you know, you shouldn't do it this way. So I think the strength of having the courage to do unconventional things is one of the most common threads that I have seen and continue to see in people's work that I admire.
Couldn't agree more. Marie, we'll just take a couple of quick questions from some of our Instagram audience. First question comes from Natalie Marie, who asks, do you have any tips for making hard decisions more efficiently?
Yes. So a few. There's one test that I like to use to tell the difference between like fear and intuition, which I think kind of speaks into her question, right? Because sometimes when you're faced with an opportunity, you're like, oh, am I pulling away from this because I am afraid? Meaning like this is natural fear that I need to move through so that I can grow and become more of who I am. Or is intuition telling me stay away from this because you'll regret it later? So those kind of things, that's what usually makes things a hard decision, right? You're like, oh, I don't know which way I should go. So there's a test that I use and it's a physical test. So what it requires is for people to take a few deep breaths, close their eyes, and tap into and tune into the very subtle truth of their body. I'm of the belief that we spend too much of our time living in our heads in this culture. We're sedentary way too much and we have lost touch with our intuition, our gut instincts, and just the body wisdom that we have at our fingertips should we choose to tap into it. So if you're considering, you know, one of two options, think about saying yes to this particular opportunity, the hard decision, whatever it is. And then ask yourself the moment after you can think of it, say, when I think about saying yes to this, instantly, do I feel expansive or contracted? And notice if something in your body either pulls back, that would be contracted, or expands. Now, let me give some more color to this. If there's something that you're presented with in your life, you may have natural fear about it. Let's say saying yes to a speaking engagement that's, say, 25,000 people in a stadium and you've never done that before. And it's kind of terrifying, but you feel like it would be a great opportunity. If when you ask this question, if I say yes to this, do I feel expansive or contracted? And all of a sudden, something in your shoulders lightens up or you start to lean forward or you feel excitement and even fear at the same time, but you're like, oh my goodness, this is going to be amazing. I don't know how the hell I'm going to do it, but I think I can do it. Then that's a good sign to say yes. Now, contrast that with if you think about this opportunity, even though it makes sense on paper, even though your logical or egoic mind says, oh, this is a great opportunity, it's such great exposure, this means you're in the big leagues, yet something in your stomach just feels heavy, or you start to pull back, or there's just this subtle indication of dread, I will tell you, Jack, that is your intuition saying that even though on paper, this looks like it's a thing that everyone thinks you should do, you can trust yourself to say no. I think the body has so much more wisdom than we give ourselves credit for, and I think it has way more intelligence than just the logical mind. So that would be my answer to her question about one technique to help you make wiser decisions when you're in a tough situation.
It's so funny you mentioned that. I've often thought exactly that. How do you determine or decipher between fear that is there to actually genuinely prevent you from doing something and fear that is there just as natural nerves that are to be overcome or moved through. So I absolutely love that body exercise. Second Instagram question comes from Hatch That Dream, Cheryl Tai. Who has been your favorite guest of all time on Marie TV?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I don't know if it's all time, but I will say the guests that I have had, I'm going to say three because I really can't.
Because you can't not.
I cannot. There are different reasons too. So let me just say that Liz Gilbert and I, so Liz Gilbert, mega author, author of Big Magic, Eat, Pray, Love, and a gajillion other titles. We had so much fun together during our interview. It was like a laugh fest and it was the first time we had ever met in person, but it was one of those experiences where I'm like, oh, she's going to be a friend for life. So that was one. Again, I'm going to bring up Tony just because he's a master and to watch him work in real time where like you just have to ask Tony like one question and gosh, brother can go for like an hour. Do you know what I mean? Like and it's always on point, right? It's like real good, but you're just like, oh, I just need to drop two or three things to Tony. And just to watch him do his thing, I think he's masterful.
Yeah.
I would also say Brené Brown and I have a ton of fun together and she's brilliant. So I'll throw those out there for you.
Love that. Some rapid fire questions to finish with. What's a popular piece of business advice that you do not agree with and why?
Okay. So I'm going to get some, you know, people are going to be like, ah, crying to me about this one. So I think that people have to be really careful about social media. I personally believe that people spend not only way too much time on social media, right? So that it's like a sinkhole in terms of their focus, their energy, they compare themselves to others, they leave feeling like shit and they don't even realize it.
Yeah.
But more importantly, you don't own the connection that you have with your clients or customers or would-be clients or customers on social. Facebook pulled off the biggest bait and switch in history. We all remember this. They had us all building these big fan pages. You can talk to people for free. And then all of a sudden they pulled the rug out from underneath and said, oh no, I'm sorry. You have to pay for that privilege. Well, guess what? Facebook owns Instagram and you've seen the same thing happen. People's organic reach has gone down the tubes. So people, I think, over prioritize social. It has its place, but you have to use it with intention and you have to understand that you don't own that connection. So you better have your email game down. And when people say that like email marketing is dead and the open rates of blah, 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 I'm like, man, you're just not doing it right because you're missing out on tons of ROI. You're missing out on huge opportunities to not only make sales, but make a difference. And you own that damn connection, not Facebook.
Love it. Couldn't agree more. What's a question you wish more people would ask you?
I think maybe it would be around, you know, when's my next dance video coming out? Because I haven't done one of those in a while. But actually, that's a lie. I do have a dance video up on Instagram right now. And right. I will tell you this, Jack, my director of operations, who, again, I wind up becoming friends with everyone I work with because I love people so much. Yeah. And I love my team. And we were in Venice in California. And she literally, we both have the same taste of music. And she's like, oh my God, Marie, listen to this song. She's like, go over there and dance. And literally, this is my director of operations. And I just listen to everything she says because she's so smart. And I wind up doing this dance to Post Malone's Wow. And she's like, oh yeah, let's put this on social. And meanwhile, there's some people on that have followed me. They're like, I know you used to teach hip hop, but girl, I've never seen you move. I was like, oh, you ain't seen nothing yet, honey. So it'd be asking me about dance. That's probably it.
I will ask you this again at the end of our conversation, but for those that want to watch the Instagram dancing right now, what's your Instagram handle?
It's at Marie Forleo.
Love it. Love it. Get over there, watch the dance. Marie, what habit have you developed that's had the biggest impact on your life?
Goodness. Mm. Okay. I can't just give one because you know that's impossible for me. So I will say meditation has been such a great habit. You know, I years ago had a clinical diagnosis of ADHD. Like my brain is... it goes all over the place, like most entrepreneurs. I think there are many of us. And Ned Hollowell, who is one of the premier, not only writers, but doctors who specializes in folks who have ADHD, he's always told me, he's like, Marie, you know, it's your gift. And I've always positioned it like that with myself. But meditation is one of those things that allows me to take this incredible gift that I have, my mind, which is very, very overactive, and channel it into a way that it really serves me. Because I think for most of us, when you have a really active mind, it can turn on you. it can be difficult. It can get dark sometimes. And so I think meditation has been one of the best tools to help me manage that. And then I would say a recent habit for me is understanding more about the forces. And I know, Jack, this is probably not a topic that maybe comes up a lot with your audience, but who knows, you'll let me know. Really delving into more of like the nuances between masculine and feminine energy.
Yep.
Again, not talking about gender or identity, just talking about differences in the way that we kind of approach our work, approach the world, approach relationships. And the masculine energy in me has always been really strong. And so as my feminine, but I haven't been able to play with it as intentionally as I'd like. And more recently, I've been just training myself and kind of how to be able to move more fluidly through all of that. And it's been really, really fun.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Marie, if you went back to the day you started in business, what's the one piece of advice you'd give yourself then, knowing what you know now?
oh my God, stop stressing out. Stop stressing so damn hard. I was so hard on myself, Jack. Right. I would torture myself and just beat myself up constantly and had so much self-doubt and so much fear and anxiety. And I understand why looking back. So I feel like I wish I could tell the younger me to have a little bit more compassion and to trust that it was all going to work out. You know, I think for so many people listening, they're very hard workers, right? They're very hard on themselves. They're trying so hard. They're juggling so many things. And if we allow our minds to beat ourselves up, it's like there's no space for rest. There's no space for renewal. There's no space for play or creativity. And I made those mistakes for years. And thankfully, I'm not making them quite as much as I used to.
Absolutely love that. What's the most surprising thing you've learned about yourself in the last year?
Oh my goodness. How much more productive I am when I'm nice to myself. It's along those same lines.
Wow. I like that.
Yeah. I think because I am my worst taskmaster and I like when I need to focus, you know, if I need to wake up at 4:30 a.m., if I need to keep going until 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, my friends laugh at me. They're like, you are like one of the most focused mother effers in the world. Like no one can take me off track.
Yeah.
But that can come at a cost, you know, in terms of stress, in terms of being like a total ass to my man, like just being bitchy, being like, leave me alone. And when I'm nice to myself and nice to other people, even if I have to get a tremendous amount done, I am 100 times more productive.
Wow. That is a really, really good answer. Team, I'm sure you have determined by now that Marie has an incredible amount to teach all of us. If you've enjoyed this interview, Marie's about to do her annual launch of B School, which is her 10th year running for the program. And ahead of the launch, we've organized access to a free training for everybody listening. You're able to head over to MarieFolioBschool.com to access that now. Marie, tell us a little bit about this free training and why people need to do it.
Yes. Well, one of the things I love to teach. Second, in today's modern environment where we have so many things that we could do to either start or grow our business, I think one of the challenges that holds us all back is overwhelm, not knowing where to put our energy, our focus, or our attention in order to get the most bang for the buck, especially when we have limited time. So this free series where we start off is walking through the 6 pillars that every entrepreneur needs in order to grow and build a modern successful business using online tools like marketing, online marketing, social media, all of that. And so I think what the first part of the 3-part series does really well is take all of those brilliant ideas that are in your head, all of the things that you could do or that you think about doing, and focuses it down into a personalized action plan that you can know, okay, here's really my own personal weak point. Here's what I need to focus on first. Here's what I need to focus on second, third, and so on in order to get the maximum results with the minimum effort. Then I think in part two, one of the most powerful pieces of the free training, and I so believe in this, Jack, and I think you do as well. One of the things I've noticed over time is one thing that can hold people back is a negative association with sales and marketing. I mean, some people love it and some people have kind of a love-hate relationship with it where they don't want to come across like a used car salesman. They don't want to be aggressive. They only want to be of service. And unwittingly, having negative associations with sales and marketing, even if you don't think you do, even if there's just a little piece of it, it will hold you back from making the impact and the income that you're capable of. So in video 2, I love this one because I really teach people how modern marketing brings out the best of your humanity, not the worst. So you never have to feel like a used car salesman. You can actually pour your highest creativity, your most joy and love into your marketing efforts. Not only will it get you more effective results, meaning you're going to make more money, but it's actually fun to do and your team will like to do it. And so marketing and sales becomes less of something that you're like, oh, I feel like this is all getting stale, and more of something like, oh, this is a joy to do, which of course is going to get you better results. And then the third part of the series is all about overcoming excuses, which, you know, are those deadly little lies that we all tell ourselves that hold ourselves back. And then there's another piece, Jack, I don't know if you know about this one, but we're doing a free class also called The 5 Biggest Mistakes Even Smart Entrepreneurs Make and How to Avoid Them. That is free too. And it's different material that I just came up with. It's very tactical. People will kind of walk away with a checklist of things that they can look at with their website, with all their profiles, with their bios, like things that they're doing right now that may be unwittingly turning business away. And they'll be able to just walk away and make those changes immediately.
Mm. And I can certainly vouch for that, team. For those of you listening, I have done Marie's trainings. As I said earlier, my team have done many of Marie's trainings. These are the best in the world as far as I'm concerned when it comes to speaking to the hearts and minds of audience and getting things done in business. Marie Forleo, thank you so much. Actually, just quickly one more time, I'm just going to give you guys that link again. It's mariefolebschool.com. So Forleo, F-O-R-L-E-O, B for business, school.com. We'll also link it up around this episode wherever you may be watching it or listening to it. Marie, you are refreshing for my soul. You're a light to so many, and watching your journey has been so incredible. Please keep going. And my audience and I super appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today. Thank you so much.
Oh, Jack, thank you for having me on. I adore you. Anytime. Love you guys. Thank you for the time you spent with us today. And go out there, have fun. And remember, the world needs that special gift that only you have.
Love that. Thank you, Marie. We'll speak to you soon.
Bye.
Ciao.
Thanks for tuning into today's podcast. I'm Jack DeLosa. If you enjoyed listening, make sure you hit subscribe and you'll be the first in line to get every new episode sent directly to your phone. While you're at it, open Instagram and connect with me. My handle is simply at Jack DeLosa, D-E-L-O-S-A. This is where you'll find me every day sharing the secrets of scaling multi-million dollar businesses and giving you a behind the scenes look at what it really takes to build a life that you love. You can also find me on all the usual places, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. Just search Jack DeLosa. Thanks again for listening. And as always, dream out loud. That's a wrap.
Yeah.